Here to present a television spectrum repack, a radio perspective, is Rich Redmond from Gates Air. Rich Redmond serves as Chief Product Officer for Gates Air, responsible for marketing, product line management, and R&D. Redmond previously held senior broadcast operations positions, including general manager, chief engineer, and technical consultant. He has served as a steering board member of the World DMB Forum, SBE, SMPTE, and AES. He has authored and presented on a number of broadcast technology topics. Redmond received a bachelor's degree in marketing management from Siena College and a master's of business administration from the University of Dayton. Please welcome Rich Redmond.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to participate today. Before I arrived here today, I was at our factory in Quincy, Illinois, and several of us were talking about, I guess you could call them unique tech tips or troubleshooting approaches. And as usual, you get enough guys who've worked around broadcast transmitters for a long time, they come up with something that one doesn't usually hear. And so I was relaying a story on a transmitter I had worked on some time ago where we had a problem in the control ladder, but you would power the breaker on, and as soon as you hit the filaments on, it would blow the breakers on the wall. So you really didn't have much chance to get very far into it to find out what circuit was the problem. And after a bunch of poking around and looking at the schematics, the non-conventional method was to take the back door off, jumper the interlock, turn the lights off in the room, and then fire the filaments on from the remote control and look for the flash. It definitely worked, and we found out where the one of the overload relays had shorted to the deck. So I'm not sure that it's exactly translates to use in an IP world like we were just hearing about earlier, but everyone kind of agreed that it was one of the more unique methods. So what I'm going to talk about a little bit today is the FCC spectrum repack, which I know we have some other sessions on, but this is really talking about it in terms to what's it mean to an FM station. You know, we were doing some work earlier in the repack analysis process and kind of thinking about what about co-located stations. And so in that context, I'll just talk a little bit about the background. If you've been a radio guy, you may not be as deeply engaged in this. If you're a TV station, chances are you've probably heard more about it than you'd like to. It's kind of the hurry up and wait category now. But anyway, we'll go through that, talk a little bit about what parts of the TV facility get impacted, how that impacts FM radio throughout the transmitter systems and antenna structures, antennas, towers, also a little bit to talk about potential interference. So at a very basic premise, and for some who've been engaged in this, this is kind of review if it's something you haven't really been focused on. You know, so why the demand? What's driving this? You know, cynics would say it's another way to generate money. Others more holistically might say, well, there's this insatiable appetite for wireless data consumption. In any event, the delivery of video content using wireless networks is really growing exponentially. It's not that everybody's on the phone talking to their friends that's sucking up all the bandwidth, nor is it inane text with emoticons. It's people watching video. Video consumption is really growing exponentially, and it's taxing the data networks. Using a unicast network with a one-to-one connection, if 100 of us are watching those cute cat videos, then there are 100 connections. If 1 million of us are watching it, there's 1 million connections. Now, in cute cat videos, that really doesn't sound like that's practical, but what really is practical is if there's a live news event or a sporting event and I'm trying to watch a stream, it's very possible that lots of people can be watching the same thing at the same time. Additionally, the spectrum that is available and becomes more available for the wireless carriers continues to be at higher and higher frequencies. And, you know, with Jeremy's presentation earlier, you know, understanding the type of impediment on a path loss, different types of things, whether it be foliage or building or other obstructions makes, you can see why UHF TV spectrum is kind of like beachfront property when it comes to penetrating buildings. And especially if you think that, you know, it's all trying to find this device that's in your pocket or on your belt inside this building filled with metal, and I'm expecting this great experience. So the mobile guys are seeing more and more demand for capacity. The spectrum repack basically says, I want to be able to take what was just set aside for television, and I want to be able to move things around so I can fit mobile payload in there in the same place. It's kind of a simplistic view. So who might it affect? Well, we can definitely say today the 126 megahertz won't happen, but the thought was somewhere between 84 and 126 megahertz of spectrum could be freed up, and these channels, you can kind of see these scenarios, the channels on the upper end of the television spectrum could get reallocated and put into 5 megahertz blocks for use by wireless carriers. Now, this would mean that some TV stations would go away. It would mean that some TV stations would go to a lower UHF channel. Some would share UHF channels, and others would go to VHF, low band or high band. What we do know is that, you know, right now we're in the 126 auction did not pass muster. There weren't enough takers to cover the amount of money that was asked. So the auction has two parts. There's a reverse auction where broadcasters basically say, this is how much I would take for my spectrum. And then people interested in the spectrum, generally thought of to be the wireless carriers, say, this is how much I would pay. So out of, I think it was 86 million, was in the reverse auction, it was in the mid-20s, was all that was paid in the forward auction. So the next step down is 114 megahertz. The reverse auction is just about wrapping up now in this phase. There'll be a forward auction. And the goal continues to be, what's the balancing point that says, I'm giving up enough spectrum, and there are enough people willing to pay for it that not only pays for the spectrum, the cost to administer it, but leaves some amount of money left over for the government to fund any number of other programs. And then there could be some additional step downs. The latest belief is that if 114 doesn't clear, it would likely go to 84, which would be stopping at, really the top here would be at channel 36. So how many stations might get impacted? And again, from a radio perspective, this is going to be important based on how many people share tower space. So if we look at the bottom, which is probably the most likely, it's somewhere between 1,000 to 1,100 TV stations are going to have to get moved. Now, the higher number, there's some thought of optimization, so it could potentially be a little bit higher. But if you think about the number of Class A and full power stations, a little over 2,000, then this is well over half will either go off the air or will have to change channels. So it's fairly significant. Now, this doesn't even touch on any of those that are LPTVs or translators. At this point, they're not really in the evaluation. Now, the cost estimates that have been put together have ranged between just shy of $2 billion to $2.9 billion to move these types of stations. Now, there's about $1.7 billion that's been set aside as part of the auction, which needs to get covered in that how much broadcasters who give up their spectrum want, how much the carriers are willing to pay, cover the administration, the auction, cover the rebate funds or reimbursement funds. So it's a big undertaking, and not just financially, but we'll talk about a little bit, time frame and resources. So the original schedule that was set assumed that by the end of 2016, this year, we would be through the auctions and there would be channel assignments. The popular belief is that's more like sometime in the middle of spring now. It's not believed that it will be this fall. So that's why kind of the schedule says there's a mandated legislated schedule that says the process needs to take 39 months. Now, depending on who you talk to, it goes everywhere from 39 months is more than ample time if you have a very clever schedule and everybody plays nicely together to somewhere around WTF, because it's a pretty broad time frame. Now, you know, if you're someone who has nothing else on your tower, you're in a place where there's not a lot of conflicting frequencies, you have plenty of wind load and ice load on your tower, great. Maybe making those changes are simple, or if you had a broadband antenna. But for a lot of stations, the time frame isn't simply installing a transmitter or getting an antenna hung. It's contention for resources, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But in any event, that's the target time frame that that lots of people are putting proposals forward on how we're going to get there. So if I'm a radio broadcaster, if the gun goes off in the springtime, there's certainly going to be a lot of activity around my tower site. Now, things that happened during that time frame, we've cleared these hurdles earlier this year, which were certain things TV stations had to file and deadlines to say I'm going to participate. The reverse auction did start in the spring, and the thought was that the forward auction would be complete. Now, this premise was assuming that all the spectrum that was the maximum would have a sale price that there would be more than enough carriers to pay for. Since that hasn't happened, it kind of goes in this do-over loop where we keep ratcheting down the amount of spectrum that's recovered until we get to that balance of how much you want to pay versus how much carriers want to pay. So that's kind of that moving time frame right now. So even though there are these milestones, we're still kind of stuck at this what was supposed to happen in the June to September time frame, because we haven't met, or the auction hasn't met, the prescribed minimums, it goes through another cycle. So the rest of these, when we think about these other dates of letting people know who the winning bidder is, letting people know they need to, you know, get an allocation and file construction permits, all of these kind of go into that, you know, plus 3 months, plus 6 months time frame. And right now, the conventional wisdom is that it's probably going to be in the springtime, you know, maybe in the April-May timeframe. But the point is, there's a fairly short period of time to get construction permits submitted. Now, when we met with the FCC, and you know, don't laugh, there was they were very, very certain they could turn CPs around in 2 weeks. Yeah. My personal experience has been much longer than that, but you know, they are certainly very focused, and there's a lot of effort and resource to be put on getting it done quickly. So, you know, while 2 weeks is politely to be said optimistic, the point is there'll be a lot of focus on getting them turned quickly, so stations can start getting into this 39-month period of building out the construction permits. Now, getting the CP. Is anyone who's ever built a radio or TV station, while that's a pretty arduous task, usually that's like the easier part of the work, depending upon what type of site you've got. So for some of these sites that may or may not have been touched in some period of time, lots of work could happen, or things that were in a pretty good position now are going to need a bunch more work to be done. So, you know, the ending date, this is kind of what the 39-month time frame you know, alleges. Most people in the broadcast side of the house believe that that's not feasible, and there have been estimates between 5 to 7 years. We'll see what happens. Now, just as kind of at a high level, what part of the facility gets impacted? Well, the kind of don't nail me down answer is it depends. Partly because lots of, you know, every site's a little bit different, but from a channel change standpoint, if you start at the antenna and move backwards, there could be the antenna impacted, the structure, whether it's within current you know, requirements today or not, the transmission line, the transmitter, and we continue back through the flow of the station. Now, depending if you're on channel sharing, you may or may not have appropriate compression in the in your head end. So even though it may be I'm moving from channel 45 to channel 23, if I'm doing channel sharing, I may need to do something with encoding, something that really doesn't have anything to do with the frequency, but it certainly could be impacted. Now, if we dig a little bit deeper, and I'll go into a little bit more depth on some of these things, but as a radio guy, some of this stuff seems a little odd, because for a long time, FM radio stations, having a transmitter, solid-state transmitters, certainly aren't rare. In fact, for the past 10 years, they've kind of been the norm at reasonably high powers. Now, very high powers, tubes have been popular, but the point is, changing the frequencies generally not been really tough. It's anywhere from, I punch a different number in on the front, maybe I have to recalibrate the transmitter. If it's a tube transmitter, maybe I move the deck in the PA socket, and I may have to move some taps, but moving across that spectrum is pretty easy. The exciter has been frequency selectable for a long, long time. But in a television facility, that's not necessarily the case. So antennas, the vast majority of them are not broadband. They're often tuned to a specific channel. Transmission line, which we'll delve into a little bit more. Again, if you're an FM radio guy, of course it works on 88 and it works on 107. Yes, I understand there may be some different power handling, but it's really not frequency determined. In UHF TV, that's not necessarily the case. Combiners and mask filters, things we don't usually deal with in FM, are all tuned to the channel. And they're radically different if you've been at a channel 14 sharp tune filter. You know, there are station bands that are substantially smaller than the channel filter. In an FM radio station, the low-pass filter is just part of the transmitter. And it's very rare that you have an outside filter with the exception of a combiner. Even, I mentioned the low-pass filter. In an FM radio station, the low-pass filter is generally broadband. It doesn't really matter where I put it within the frequency band. In a television transmitter, that's not the case. The power amplifiers and the splitters and combiners within the transmitter are often frequency-determined parts. Now, you may be able to move one or two channels one way or the other. So if I'm moving from, channel 34 to channel 28, maybe it's close enough. In VHF, there are usually only one or two channels. So if I was on channel 12 and had to move to 11 or 10, I may very well not be able to do that. So there's a lot of points in there in a facility that get impacted on something that seems fairly simple, such as changing a channel. Now, who's going to get impacted? Well, we did some analysis on how many stations were co-located. So there are about 1,150 co-located sites. If you're in Rhode Island, good news. You don't need to worry about it. So other than reading today, somebody drove a Suburban into a station in Rhode Island and crashed into the general manager's office. I'm not really sure that this is going to be a big deal for radio stations in Rhode Island, but you know, with the exception of that fairly small state, you know, if you're in Texas, this is a lot of people. Now, out of that, there's about 2,400 stations that are impacted, 2,400 radio stations. Now, these can be translators, so you know that may be fairly simple at a low power, but 1,300 of them are full power stations. So these could be 100 kilowatt Class C stations. It could be a Class A station. In any event, you can see by the state count, there are some that have significantly more impact than others. Now, when you go to swap out a transmitter, again, if I'm generally in the, if I have a shared site, if I'm thinking in the radio world, at Gates Air, we build a fairly compact high power transmitter. There are other people that have bigger ones, but the point is, even a 40 kilowatt FM transmitter today is not incredibly large. In our case, it's two 19-inch equipment racks. Even a tube transmitter is not substantially bigger than that. But because we don't have all the filters, this is just a floor plan kind of showing that on the left-hand side is a lower power backup transmitter. It's got a fairly simple channel filter. But if you look on the right-hand side, this is what some may refer to as a magic T. You look at a fairly large combining system for a transmitter, it's substantially larger and it takes up a significant amount of footprint. Now, sometimes these are suspended from the ceiling, but in any event, it's a significant amount of mechanical packaging and space that it takes up. So to be able to set up on a different channel simultaneously to be able to come over is a fair impact. Now, if I'm an existing FM station that may have moved in after the TV station went on the air, it may even be simple things like I can't get the filter in and out because what wasn't in the way before in this 35 kilowatt FM transmitter is now there. It's not a problem when you're shuttling modules and tubes in and out, but if I now need to move the combiner or the filter in and out of that space, it could be a big deal. So temporary relocation may be a factor. Similarly, by the way, is electrical service and so forth. If the TV station now needs to add a separate transmitter they want to turn on and test, or be able to have up and running and then flash cut over, the electrical service may or may not need upgrading depending upon how many people have moved in and start using that site. Now, one thought is that for the TV station, a temporary or a new backup antenna, if you will, that might be side-mounted would need to get erected and put on the tower. This would likely be used over a significant period of time to aid in the transition. Now, there's a couple things this may drive. Number one, the simple thing may be there needs to be downtime for your FM radio station while work's done on the tower to bolster the structure to handle this additional television antenna. To the extreme of the tower's out of capacity, the FM station that was the last added may have to vacate or find another place, or perhaps move lower on the tower to free up side mount space for a TV antenna. So figuring out, you know, if you're co-located, what your TV partners may or may not be planning will be important, because we believe a lot of stations will have these side mount antennas. Yeah, so in the category of a fairly cool picture, although I'm not sure how he got there, and I certainly know I wouldn't be there, the guy on the tower, you know, since most of these stations have been put on, most of the DTV stations have been put on, the wind load and ice specifications have changed. And that may very well mean that what was once passable today may not actually be meeting the requirements. And if you go to do new work, the tower needs to get brought up to the current specifications. So this could very well mean that even if I'm taking the old TV antenna off, I'm not adding any additional wind load or weight, the fact that the requirements have changed, I may very well now need to do structural work on the tower. So certainly finding out whether, you know, structural analysis has been done or what the plans for that might be if you're co-located will be pretty important, because it's going to be a pretty big driver. Now, one of the things that will likely happen is stations move down in frequency to get the same amount of coverage area, TV stations that is, they'll generally need less ERP to have a similar type of footprint. Now, the other thing that we will talk a little bit about is the antenna physically changes in size if you want to keep the same amount of gain. So if I wanted to take, and I was going from channel 51 to channel 24, and I wanted to keep the physical size and weight approximately the same of the antenna, my gain goes, and this is not circularly or elliptically polarized. Right now we're only talking about like to like, so this would be a horizontally polarized antenna, which again for radio guys, if you know, we've kind of taken for granted for years, but of course I'm circularly polarized. Or potentially the last time you had that discussion was a college station that hadn't done anything, or it might have been some time in your past. But in most TV stations, there's only one polarization, and that's horizontal. Now, ATSC 3.0, which is kind of on the horizon, may drive TV stations to make some changes. They try to target people in a mobile environment. Certainly for FM guys, you remember when you went circularly polarized, it was, in many cases, like getting a significant coverage enhancement. But the point here is that if I keep the same physical size and weight because of tower restrictions, I have a fairly significant change in the gain, going from a gain of 27 to a gain of 20, which may mean that I need larger transmission line because I need more power to drive that potentially. if I want to keep the same type of coverage in ERP. Now, if I want to replicate with the same gain antenna, I now go up a fairly significant amount of vertical real estate, going up to 58 feet, but my weight basically almost doubles. So it's a fairly significant impact. So figuring out what happens to the antenna based on a channel change could have a really big impact on what the capacity of the tower is and how that impacts the radio stations that are there. Now, you know, if I have a tall tower, you're starting left to right, I have a tall tower, I've got a lot of space on it, it has plenty of capacity, so there's room to put a side mount antenna for the TV station, the radio station's not in the middle of the aperture. It could simply be a case of making sure you coordinate powering down for the other tenants on your tower or the tower you're leasing. If the FM antenna is top mounted and the TV antenna is below that, again, less impact. Now, if I'm on a heavily loaded tower or I'm in a multi-tower farm, then there's a lot of interdependencies and there's going to be a lot more interruptions. Now, these interruptions may very well mean that if I'm the radio station, depending upon the duration of them, I may need to seriously think about making sure my backup site actually works, if I have one, or I may need to think about, do I need to be instituting something? A couple kilowatt transmitter at the studio may be significantly better than being off the air for a significant period of time when tower work's being done. And it may not be all at the same time, as anyone who went through the DTV conversion knows. You may have several months of nightly interruptions because there's only a certain amount of work time that can be done. So some of the things that can happen if you do have to relocate on the tower, your performance may be impacted. Now, generally, it's not the vertical polarization, but if we look here, and these are a couple of antenna plots the dielectric guys did, if you look on the left-hand side, assuming a 24-inch face, while they're not exactly the same patterns, they're a little bit almost flipped, you kind of see the shape of the pattern that someone may have. If that same antenna has to move lower on the tower, potentially to a 48-inch face, you can see that the vertical polarization really doesn't change very much, but the horizontal gets a pretty big swing. Now, if, for example, the place you'd like to shoot at is at 0 degrees, this could be good news. You now have a directional antenna that's not classified as a directional. If you were at 180 degrees or you were at, 220 degrees, life is probably not very good. So understanding the impact of the FM station's coverage based on a move may mean that I need to do a study of what's there, because there are plenty of stations that only notionally have an idea of what the pattern is, because not everybody does pattern studies. Now, I mentioned transmission line before, and I'll have to admit, you know, as a guy who started in FM, when I first started understanding this, it was kind of a foreign concept to me. Now, if you're a TV guy who has done a lot of rigid line and UHF, of course, this is old hat, but the point is, it's not just the power handling capability, it's also the frequency and the associated wavelength of the rigid line. So rigid line comes in a couple different lengths. It's usually 20, 19 and a half, and 19 feet. And those are staggered based on, 19 and three quarters and 19 and a half, based on the channel that has to do where the visuar hot points fall. So you try to avoid having them at the constant joints on the rigid line. So for example, if you use this chart, if I was on channel 48 and I had 20-foot line sections, if I move to channel 28, life is good, assuming I didn't have a significant change in the power handling capability. If I have to move to channel 26, which is a red block, then I'm going to have problems with my transmission line. And anyone who's seen an installation 20 feet at a time going up a 2,000-foot tower, it's not exactly something you do in an afternoon. It's a pretty significant undertaking. So paying attention to what that's going to impact. Now again, we go back to the previous thing of I'm out of the aperture, there's plenty of space on the tower. Well, if the transmission line needs to be replaced, at some point it's going to go through my FM aperture. It may also trigger some change in the tower loading. Now, the other thing that the non-commercial educational guys are painfully aware of is how close is channel 6. Now, some of that went away with the conversion to DTV. Lots of people abandoned the low-band VHF spectrum. Man-made noise, other reasons, you know, very much the reason why UHF is kind of beachfront property. But if people do move back there, and the reason why that may be attractive is if I'm a station in UHF and I choose voluntarily to move to low band V, I can get just about as much money for my channel as if I chose to turn it into the FCC. So if I'm someone who's running a megawatt on channel 45, and I say, geez, you know what? I think I can cover all my head ends and mobile's not important to me. I'm gonna move to channel 6 or 5. Number one, during the auction process, I can get a significant amount of money. Number two, I still protect all my must carry with the cable guys. Number three, my ERP drops significantly down to the, you know, probably in the 30 kilowatt range from a megawatt. So that could be good news for some guys. That makes sense. Now, if you want to target a mobile device, the analogy I've used, if you're operating on channel 2 through 6, it's kind of like, I don't know, how many of you guys remember watching the old Andy Griffith Show, right? Andy and Barney pulled up in the police car, right? And the antenna went from the back bumper to the front bumper of the car, right? Well, that would be kind of like trying to watch mobile TV on channel 3. You would have your phone with this massive antenna trying to jack into it. Not real practical. But for some guys' business models, we've had public stations who said maybe that makes sense for them. But in any event, if I'm a NPR or a college station, I may get a new TV neighbor that I'm going to have to pay some attention to. Now, the impact on broadcast technical resources, you know, this can show up in a lot of different ways for radio stations. It could be everything from, I already have a CP, I'm going through a fund drive, or I'm planning in the next capital year because I'm doing a power increase and I got to change out the antenna on the tower. Well, the guys I normally use may be quickly consumed doing all this television work. So making sure that I'm lining up my resources or at least understanding what the constraints are, irrespective of work being done on TV, just I may not be on a common tower. I may have nothing to do with the TV station, but the guys I use may get consumed. The same for structural analysis. If I use that same analogy and I had to do a structural analysis, getting people to do that, the person who may help do transmitter installation, or in fact, my FCC consultant that I always use, he or she may be getting consumed doing television applications. Remember that 3-month period of time to file CPs and the Fantasyland 2-week reply. But resources are going to be in contention. Now, there's a lot of people who talk about how fast it can get done and we can get really clever, and guys who put up cell sites, why clearly they can hang antennas on 2,000-foot towers. Everybody's got an opinion, and they vary, but everyone will say there's contention for resources. So if I'm a radio station, I may not even be co-located. I'm going to want to pay attention to what that impact is. So if I'm a co-located station, some things to think about. TV station's doing an antenna change, that could be impacting me. I may need to relocate on the tower, I may need to have off-air time. At the very least, I just need to understand what the game plan is. Transmission line change, we talk about moving from channel 48 to channel 26. If I need to go hang 1,000 feet of rigid line or make changes on that, it's a pretty significant impact. Same type of thing, I could have impact to my station that's off air time. If the tower needs structural reinforcement, or if the landlord says, I need to shed some loading on the tower, if I'm the last guy on or the one paying the lowest amount of rent, I may be asked to find a new home. Now, if it's an RF system change or a transmitter system change, imagine everything on the tower is broadband, the transmission line's good. I'm one of the lucky TV guys that doesn't have to do anything on my tower. Well, there can be changes in the building if I'm an FM radio station that I need to think about. Where's the TV the TV transmitter going? Now, some places, there's this big empty space where the analog transmitter was. It's not a big deal. Some places, though, that analog transmitter's long gone and more tenants have moved in. Maybe even my FM station went where that was. So finding a floor space may be an impact. That large RF system, if a second one needs to be installed for the new channel, that too could have a fairly significant impact And there are a few stations that actually diplex with TV stations. So there are some radio stations on the low end of the FM band that share a Channel 6 antenna. Not very many, but certainly that could be impacted. And then the other, this may or may not be a huge impact, is the electrical service. If to add this additional transmitter, the electrical service needs to be overhauled and a new entrance put in, there can be off-air time. Now, that may not be very significant, but it's certainly something to plan for. So, you know, we kind of look at it this way. There's about 2,300 radio stations out there that are co-located with TV. Depending upon the timing of the repack, at some point over the next, pick your time frame, 39 months to 7 years, you could very well have an impact. The best thing to do is go talk to your neighbors early. You don't want a surprise. Hearing from your friend Bob at Channel 28 saying, by the way, we're going to start 6 hours a day off air starting next week, probably not when you want to find out about that. Finding out as early as you can and developing your own strategies to work together and to have a backup plan to stay on the air, pretty important. Now, one of the things that should be noted is that in the reimbursement funds, other things that need to happen on the tower for the station to get moved in the facility, reasonable costs are reimbursable. Now, it's very possible that if you're an FM station and you have to get moved or you need a backup antenna installed or something like that, the TV station could very well put that as part of their cost to transition, just like bolstering the tower or some other work that they need to have done. So if you think that's going to happen, again, it's important to engage with your television colleagues. Now, if you're co-owned, well, okay, you guys probably have already had these discussions. But if you're, you know, neighbors on the tower, it's incumbent upon you to take some initiative. You know, I think the other thing really is, as we talked a little bit, understand what the demand will be on structural engineers, on antenna supply and installation crew. Because you could very well have, or in consultants, you could very well have a totally separate project for your FM radio station. And if you're buying from a supplier who also builds TV antennas, for example, it may impact the time frame it takes you to get antennas. If your normal crew is one that's in demand, you may have a conflict there, and the same with your consultant. It's not that you won't get through it. It just could be a big impact. So really try to plan ahead, engage, ask some questions. There's a lot of uncertainty now. You know, you go to most typical TV stations, you'll either get the answer that we can't say anything because we're in a quiet period. Someone will give a shrug and say, nobody's telling me anything, or the corporate guys are looking at it. But fairly soon, in the next 6 months, people will start to get some clarity. And if you're a radio station that has some TV neighbors, getting to understand what their plans are and how that might impact you as early as you can will be pretty important. So I'm glad to take any questions or comments that anyone has. I see someone with a hand up over here, and I think a microphone's coming.
Back in the analog days, FM stations had to protect Channel 6 stations, and so many of them in the educational band were vertical only. Since most of the Channel 6 stations went away with the DTV conversion, many of those stations have now gone to circular polarization or done power increases. Have you heard any scuttlebutt about what the FM protection of Channel 6 stations will have to be? The last I knew, those rules were still based on analog contours.
Yeah, it's a good question. Everything we've seen so far is that they're the same rules that would apply. So I haven't seen anything proposed myself that would say they would change. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They're archaic. Well, you know, I would think that's part of figuring out where the Channel 6 fits in. I mean, if you're in a market that's got somebody on 88.1 that's a Class B now, chances are pretty good that's not an option. There's a
With the initial auction, reverse auction that we had, that we didn't meet the funds quite. Right. How far off from the goal were we?
Oh yeah, it was a massive amount. So you know, it's kind of like the guy that wants to buy the Maserati, but he kind of really can't even get into the Kia. I think it was $88 billion was what the reverse auction was, and it was $23 billion or so that was the forward auction. So yeah, pretty massive.
Yeah, so then my question slash concern is, what happens if we don't meet it again, and then again, and then again?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, look, the process says you'll keep cutting down the amount of available spectrum to get to a point where it's scarce enough that it'll increase the price, you know, per that section of spectrum. The other thing is, you know, there's some belief that the carriers, in kind of a strategy of trying to set prices, came in with very low offering in the first round with the belief that even if they bid it at what they might be willing to pay, there wouldn't be enough to overcome the amount of spectrum that would be given up. So again, everybody has an opinion. I'll just say the things that I've heard and where we kind of think it'll probably end up is likely around 86 megahertz, and that's probably where they balance out. And that the 128 or 126 was very optimistic to begin with. I'm not sure you would find many people that believe that was going to get fulfilled. Sorry, I couldn't keep track of it. I'll let you guys with the microphones pick who's next.
Just a couple of observations. They keep talking about cellular needs more spectrum for better throughput. Well, these frequencies aren't about throughput. These frequencies are about coverage. So there's kind of a hoodwinking going on here. The FM guys need to remember there'll be a lot of rigid lines that'll become available for repurposing. 20-foot sections and 19.5-foot sections don't operate the entire FM band. So you'd need to sweep a line to make sure it works at your frequency, because FM 17.5 feet, it covers the whole FM band, and I don't know any TVs that are using that line length.
Yeah, good point.
As far as the question about the FM and the low band FM channel 6, FCC has said that they're going to try to avoid assigning stations in low band on channel 6 because of the FM problem, and on channel 14 because of the land mobile problems, interference. So there, I think they said it was like they're going to start allocating it on channel 5 and then working down for the station. You know, there may be some on channel 6, but they're going to try to keep it down as low as possible.
Yeah, thank you. Other questions? Good. Well, look, you'll find, these types of papers, as well as others we have on the repack, you'll find at the Gates Air website, gatesair.com. And there's actually another website that's kind of a, I guess it's an independent thing. We've done some stuff with them called repackready.com, and it kind of gathers a lot of information on repack in general. So you'll be able to find different papers and such. So if you're looking to research, it doesn't take too long to find papers by ourselves and plenty of other smart folks. And I think there's a session tomorrow that goes more in depth into the repack in general. But we just kind of wanted to highlight that there certainly can be some impact on radio. So thank you very much.